So this morning, I would like to share with you the topic of the fall of Babylon. And this morning, I would like to share part one. Part one is concerning the prophecies of the fall of Babylon in the Old Testament. And this is mainly recorded in Isaiah chapter 13, 14, as well as 44 and 45. And next time, I would like to share the fall of Babylon. And this prophecy is recorded in Revelation 17, 18. So I'm sure everybody has heard of Babylon. And so what exactly is Babylon? Babylon is usually referred to the capital city of Babylonia, but which is the empire that existed in the Near East in southern Mesopotamia between two main rivers, which is the Tigris and the Euphrates. And it was also in this city that the Tower of Babel was built, according to the Bible. And Babylon not only can refer to the capital city itself, but it also refer to sometimes to the whole land of Babylonia, or they call it the land of the Chaldeans. And here's a map. If you see the Euphrates. Anyway, so if you see Euphrates and Tigris in the middle, Babylon kingdom is right in between. All right. So this is Babylon kingdom in the ancient time. Okay. And where was Babylon? How do I go to the next page? Anyway, so Babylon was located, actually, the city itself, it's on the Euphrates rivers, and it's about 50 miles south of modern Baghdad, which is Iraq's capital, and it's north of a modern city in Iraq called Al-Hila. So if you actually search Google Map, you will see it, in Al-Hila, which is in Iraq. And this is another map in relation to the rest of Arabia and Middle East. And you can see that Babylonia is towards that side and the east side and the two rivers. And then there's Babylon in the middle, right on top of Euphrates. Okay. And what is the meaning of Babylon? In Akkadian, which is the original word, it actually means the gateway of the gods. They believe that in Babylon, they have direct access to their god. And that kind of reminds you of Tower of Babel kind of thing. And also, but in the Hebrew, Bible, they don't use the word Babylon. They use the word Babel. And so these two words are actually interchangeable. Babel means confusion. And so let me give you a little bit background of Babylonia. The Babylonian kingdom usually is separated into three stages. The first one is called the Old Babylonian Empire. And this is the first time that we hear the mention of this Babylonian kingdom is about 2300 BC. But they know that before that it already existed because by that time they already have a pretty extensive city there. And one of the most famous king is called Hammurabi. Hammurabi was very famous because he's the one that made Babylon into a capital city. And since then, it became really prosperous. And he was also very famous because he came up with the first code of law that the citizen have to abide by. And it's a very harsh code of law that other empires don't have. And they call that the Code of Hammurabi or Hammurabi. Okay, and then after that, after his death, subsequent kings were not as strong. Therefore, you don't hear much about Babylonia anymore, and we call that the Middle Babylonian Empire. And during this time, Babylonian kingdom was subject to Assyrians. And also during this time, it is, according to the Bible history, this is a time when Israel, the northern kingdom, was being captured and by Assyria, and the people were being exiled. And so during the same time, Babylonian was subject to Assyria. Okay, then the third stage of this empire is around the 600 BCs, and this is called the Neo or New Babylonian Empire. And starting from this king called Nabopolassar, he is the father of Nebuchadnezzar. And he actually fought with the Assyrians and earned the independence and also took over Assyria. Okay, and since then, Babylonian became very, very prosperous. And when Nebuchadnezzar took over, Babylonians was at its height of splendor, and they were the richest empire, and that city was the greatest city of all time. And if you want to look at what Babylon looked like at that time, at its highest splendor, it is actually about 196 square miles, which is five times the size of the city of London. So if you just imagine how big that is. It is also a quadrangle, kind of like some historians say it's like a square, some said it's like a rectangle. And it's surrounded by a moat. A moat is a trench that they dig, and there's water around it. So the whole city is surrounded by water, so you can't really get in without going through the gate where the bridge is. And the city is also cut in half by the Euphrates. Remember earlier I mentioned that the city sits on top of Euphrates, right? So it's actually cut in half. So there's left side and right side of the city, and in the middle is the river that runs through the city. And this city, in addition to the moat, right behind the moat is double walls. So there's inner wall and outer wall. And during its splendor, and this Babylon city housed the Hanging Garden, which is one of the seven wonders of the world. And it also had the really magnificent palace of Nebuchadnezzar, which was very famous. And also there's a temple called the Ziggurat, which was really magnificent, which I will show you pictures. And because of these really magnificent buildings, it was those things that Nebuchadnezzar was boasting about and when he was being punished by God in the book of Daniel. Okay, here's a picture of the city map. So in the middle is cut by this river. And here's a Google map of what it looks like. And this is nowadays when you go to Babylon and it becomes a tourist attraction. And this is the map that they drew of the ancient time. So you see the Euphrates River and then the city wall. Okay, here's another picture. So in order to get into the city, you need to go through a bridge or a gate. And here's the city, five times the size of London. Okay, and this is one of the gates that people can go visit now. And this is called the Ishtar Gate. It's the most, exuberant or the most magnificent one. And it's really luxurious, the way that they design it and the things, the materials that they use. And on it, they used glazed tiles, blue glazed tiles that has a lot of lions motif. And this is another wall, and they use a mythical animals motif. This is a picture of the Hanging Garden, the Seven Wonder, one of the Seven Wonders. Here's another picture of it with the river that runs through the city. And behind it, you can see the Ziggurat, which is the temple. And this temple is very, very famous in history. Here's another picture of the temple, Ziggurat. Okay, so at the time, Nebuchadnezzar was so strong that he seemed unstoppable. He was just conquering, conquering, conquering. And you can see that from the earlier maps, from the very ancient time until the middle empire until now, it's getting much bigger. So at first it was just this area, and then it was this area, and then now it's like down here. So he basically conquered Assyria, took over Assyria. He also took over Egypt. He took over Tyre, Moab, Ammon, Edom, and also God's city, which is Jerusalem. So at that time, nobody could really resist his power. And so if you imagine yourself as a rival king and you're trying to stop him, then according to a historian, the Greek historian in 400 BC, his name is Herodotus and Herodotus, and he was saying that, first of all, you have to fight outside the city to on the land. And if you can win over that in the field, then you have to have enough boats to just cross over the moat, which is around. If you see the river, like a, they channel the Euphrates River and have the water right there. So you have to have enough boats to cross. And once you cross there, you would have to, deal with a double wall. And the double wall was 56 miles long, 300 feet high, and the wall itself is 85 feet, thick. I've never seen a wall that's so thick. And you also have to go through 8 massive gates. And these gates are made of copper, so it was very strong. And also, there are 200, this is a picture of a gate. So if you imagine you get through the wall and you're trying to go through the gate, and this is so narrow, and then if they would drop lead and other stuff from the top, right? And you can't really get through this place. Okay, and here is another picture. This is the Ishtar Gate that I was telling you about earlier, and this is the tower. Okay, so and they also have 250 towers on the walls that are 450 feet high, and then on top of the walls and the towers there'll be archers, and again they would be dropping very heavy thing, molten lead, and if you're lucky enough to pass through all that, you have to face the second set of wall. And between the first set of wall and the second set of wall, there's a no man's land. There's a place where it's just empty, and they have rubbles there. So again, you know, it's very, very difficult to get through the whole city. And that's why they call it Babylon was impregnable. Like, you just cannot get through. However, what is impossible for men is possible for God. And if you read the book of Isaiah, you see that God used Isaiah to prophesize the downfall or the fall of Babylon. So let us look at Isaiah chapter 13. Isaiah 13. Okay. Let's read verse 1. Verse 1, the burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos saw. Verse 2, lift up banner on the high mountain, raise your voice to them, wave your hand that they may enter the gates of the nobles. So like I mentioned earlier, the gates of the nobles, which is the Ishtar gates, you know, this is where God was calling the enemies, which later on we will find out is Persia. Led by Cyrus, will come through this gate. Let's jump to verse 6. Verse 6, wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Verse 7, therefore all hands will be limp. Every man's heart will melt. Verse 8, and they will be afraid. Pangs and sorrows will take hold of them. They will be in pain as a woman in childbirth. Continue. They will be amazed at one another. Their faces will be like flames. Verse 9. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. Let's jump to verse 15. Everyone who is found will be thrust through, and everyone who is captured will fall by the sword. 16, their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. Verse 17, behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, who will not regard silver. And as for gold, they will not delight in it. 18, Also their bowls will dash the young men to pieces, and they will have no pity on the fruit of the womb. There I will not spare children. 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. 20. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be settled from generation to generation. Nor will the Arabian pitch tents there, nor will the shepherds make their sheepfolds there. 21. But wild beasts of the desert will lie there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches will dwell there, and wild goats will caper there. 22. The hyenas will howl in their citadels, the jackals in their pleasant palaces. Her time is near to come, and her days will not be long. Okay. So you can see that according to Isaiah's prophecies, Babylon, even though it was impregnable, but according to God's will, they will be fallen. And there are two reasons, according to chapter 13, 14, why God prophesies about their fall. And the first reason is because of their pride, their haughtiness. They think that they are impregnable. They think that they will never fall. That kind of reminds me of the Titanic, where they first sail, and it says that it's unsinkable, right? But it sank because of its pride. It's just, you know, something that God really detests. So let's look at Isaiah chapter 13, verse 11. Isaiah 13, 11. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquities. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible or of the cruel ones. So here it's very clear that God is punishing them because of their pride. And when somebody think that they are, you know, so strong that everything they accomplish is because of them and that they're higher than God or they don't need God, then this is when God always punish. And let's also turn to chapter 14. This is a very familiar passage that we often use to describe the fall of Satan. But here, chapter 14, verse 12 onwards, it's referring to the Babylonian king. Verse 12, how you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, how you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. You have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest side of the north. 14, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. It will be like the Most High. 15, yes, you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Verse 16, those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms? 17, who made the world as a wilderness and destroyed its cities, who did not open the house of his prisoner. Okay, another reason that that attributed to the fall of Babylon in God's eyes is because God used Babylon to punish his own people, his chosen ones. And when the time is up, then God wants to rescue them or to save them. God wants to offer salvation to his people again. And therefore, even though Babylon was God's instrument to punish his people, but because they're the enemies, they're not the chosen ones, also they also punish the Israelites more than what God has intended. They were very cruel, according to the passage we just read. And therefore, you know, God wanted to save his people from their enemies, even though it was God who sent this enemy to his people. So let's read Isaiah chapter 14, verse 1 and 3. Verse 1, for the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will still choose Israel and settle them in their own land. The strangers will be joined with them and they will cling to the house of Jacob. Verse 3, it shall come to pass in the day of the Lord that God will give you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and the hard bondage in which you were made to serve. Okay, so these are the two reasons that, you know, that Babylon was meant to fall. The first one is because of its pride. The second one was because God wanted to save his people. Okay, so according to history, we all know that Babylon actually fell. And And this is the timeline of the Babylonian king. Babylon fell about 23 years after Nebuchadnezzar's death. And we know that during Nebuchadnezzar's lifetime, nobody would ever imagine that Babylon would ever fall. And if you look at the timeline really quickly, after Nebuchadnezzar's death, his son, called Emil-Marduk, only reigned for 2 years. And after that, he was murdered by his own brother-in-law, called Nergal-Sir, and that is the son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar. And that person only reigned for 4 years. And after that, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, which is the son of Nergal-Sir, he took the throne for only 9 months. And he was assassinated because he was so young at that time. And he was not fit to be a king. So after that, the assassins kind of just put this person, who's an old scholar or a noble, an official, called Nabonidus, and put him into the throne. And he reigned for more than 10 years. But at the time, because he was a person that was very good at building temples and rebuilding temples, so all his energy, he was always put into those effort into building temples. So he was not really, he was never really in the city of Babylon. So he put his son called Belshazzar, which I'm sure some of you have heard in the book of Daniel. Belshazzar, he put him into ruling the city for him while he is away, building temples himself. Okay, it is during his reign, Nabonidus, and with his co-regent Belshazzar, his son, that Babylon actually was taken over. And this history is recorded in the book of Daniel, chapter 5. So let's turn to that. The book of Daniel, chapter 5, verse 1 to 9. And I know that a lot of you have already heard of the story. So verse 1, Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple, or ancestor, had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. So here you see that he asked his officials to go get the holy vessels that they have taken, or Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem, the temple. And they're going to use it for their party. So this is the night when they were taken over by Persia King Cyrus. And that night, the Persian armies were outside the moat. And they've been fighting for a while. But the army of the Babylonians army, they withdrew behind the moat. They went into their city and they were partying while their enemies were outside the city. And he ordered that, these holy vessels be used to drink wine for their party. Verse 3, then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of the Lord, which had been in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords, his wives and concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Verse 6, then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other. Verse 7, the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. And as you can see, third ruler is because his father is the real king. Belshazzar is like the co-regent, and therefore whoever that can solve this puzzle will be the third ruler. Verse 8, but all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or made known to the king his interpretation. Well, the reason that they couldn't understand it is because the writing says, meeny, meeny, to kill you, Farsin. And that's written in verse 25. And if you look at what it means, meeny means 50 shekels or a mina. A mina is 50 shekel. So meeny, meeny, that means 50 shekels, 50 shekels. To kill, one shekel. And then you, Farsin, or Peres, some versions have Peres, which is the singular of you, Farsin. It means half a shekel. So nobody really understands what that means. Like in today's term, $50, $50, $1, 50 cents. So nobody really understood what that means. So when Daniel came, he explained to him what it meant. Let's see. That is recorded in verse 17 onwards. So let's read 17. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the most high of God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your ancestor, a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. And because of the majesty he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whoever he wished, he executed. Whoever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up, and whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his spirit was heartened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the Son of Man. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was like the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the Most High of God rules in the kingdom of men, and God appoints over it whomever he chooses. So this part described the history of Nebuchadnezzar, where there are 7 years of his life where he became a beast, right? He lived among other beasts, because of his haughtiness, that he thought all this was because of him. So only until the moment that he realized that it was God who gave him all these things. God taught him a lesson by taking everything away from him, that he recognized and acknowledged it was God who gave him everything. So verse 22. But you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this. 23. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives and concubines, have drank wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Okay, in 24. And that's why the fingers of the hand was sent from him, and this writing was written. And in this inscription was written, meeny, meeny, to kill you, Farsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Meeny means God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. To kill means you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. 28. Peres, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. 29. Then Belshazzar gave the command. They clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain around his neck, made a proclamation concerning him that he should be third ruler in the kingdom. 30. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. So that was the fall of Babylon. And historically, and how was Babylon taken over? And according to history, this is how it was taken over. So you know how there's a moat around the city? Double walls, towers, gates, cannot get through. So the enemy, Cyrus, his army, dug a trench to channel the moat water, river, into a existing swamp to the west of the kingdom. So when the time comes when all the water kind of like was low enough, they basically march under the gate and just walk right into the center of the city because Euphrates rivers run in the middle, right? So they basically just walked in. And there was no armies to fight back because they were all partying that night. So basically, in one night like this, historically, I think it was called the bloodless battle, meaning they don't need to fight. They just walk right in and just capture the king and just killed him that night. Okay. And then if you read Isaiah chapter 44, I thought this was interesting. Isaiah 44, God even prophesied how he was going to be taken over. Chapter 44, verse 24. Thus says the Lord your Redeemer, he who formed you from the womb. I am the Lord who makes these things, who stretches out the heavens all alone, who spread abroad the earth by myself. Let's skip to 27. Who says to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up your rivers. Verse 28. Who says of Cyrus, he's my shepherd and he shall perform all my pleasure, saying to Jerusalem, you shall be built. So basically, the Bible prophesies that Cyrus will be the one that will come and take over this kingdom. And also, it will be through the method of drying the river. So that's how historically Cyrus taken over the city of Babylon. So the next question is, has the prophecy been fulfilled? And most of the Bible scholars would agree that parts of the prophecies have been fulfilled, but parts of it have not. If you remember what we read earlier in Isaiah 13, it was saying that Babylon will never be inhabited, right? And when they see anybody, they will thrust through their body. Everybody will be killed, and there'll be no mercy, and no human being will live there. But actually, Babylon was only taken over by Cyrus, the Persian king at that time. And then that city continued to function. It wasn't like people were not thrust through, and it was not that nobody inhabited there. And consequently, the kingdom, other kings of Persia lived there, but they loot a lot of the buildings. Greece, Alexander took over the city and, destroy parts of it, but he was going to rebuild some parts of it, but he never really got to rebuild it, and then he passed away. And then Rome over conquered Babylon, but they never really destroyed the city. They just lived there, loot the things, and also they slowly let it become desolate as they moved the capital somewhere else of their empire. Okay, so the rest of the prophecy actually will be fulfilled in the last days, as described in Revelation 17 and 18, which we will study next time. So today, not much of the ancient site has remained. It's basically most of it has been looted, and only some fragments of the buildings remains. And when I read this, I thought it was interesting. Saddam Hussein attempted to rebuild the city and try to dwell there. I guess he's trying to fulfill the Revelation prophecies of the Babylon the Great, the harlot. Okay, and after that, the U.S. Army took over the city, and it became the camp of the U.S. Army. And then right now, it became a tourist attraction. Okay, and this is what it looks like nowadays. It's like a heap of ruins. So from studying this whole history, there's one main teaching that I've learned and gathered, which is you really see God's sovereignty in the whole process of the rise of the Babylonian kingdom and to the fall of Babylon. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah 14, verse 24. This is continuing the prophecy that we read, but this part is actually talking about Assyria. However, I feel that this passage also is very good to conclude the whole fall of Babylon. Let's read 24 to 27. The Lord of hosts have sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so it shall come to pass. And as I have purposed, it shall stand. I will break the Assyrian in my hand, and on my mountains tread him underfoot. Then his yoke shall be removed from them, and his burden removed from their shoulders. He's talking about his people. 26. This is the purpose that is purposed against the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out over all the nations. 27. For the Lord of hosts has purposed, and who will annul it? His hand is stretched out, and who will turn it back? So there's a reason why God allowed Assyria to take over Israel. There's a reason why God allowed Babylon to take over Assyria and Judah. And there's also a reason why God allowed Babylon to fall. And all of this, if you continue reading the whole book of Isaiah, it is so that his people and the whole nations in the whole world will recognize that he is God, that everything is under his power and control. And in a lot of chapters in the book of Isaiah, he kept mentioning over and over again, know that I am the Lord. There's only one. There's none like me. I am the Lord. Okay. So if you have time, you can read Isaiah chapter 45. It actually, it's him talking to King Cyrus and saying that I will give you this kingdom, that you take over the whole kingdom in the whole world. And the reason is that I am the Lord and there's no other. Okay. And so as a teaching that I've learned from this is that we need to acknowledge God's sovereignty by recognizing that he controls the course of human history. And the more you study the minor prophets and also the major prophets during this period of time when Israel was taken over, the more you will realize, and then if you study into history too, historical books, you will really see that God is in control of human history, even in political history. And the next point is we need to acknowledge God's sovereignty by humbling ourselves before God. As we read earlier, the downfall of Belshazzar is because he was so haughty that he basically blasphemed God by using holy vessels for his own pleasures. He does not respect God at all, even though he knew that his ancestor, Nebuchadnezzar, was humbled by God during 7 years of his life. So, life application. Let's read Proverbs chapter 3. Okay, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5 through 12. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. From whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as the Father, the Son, in whom he delights. So here I really see that this summarizes the whole teaching of the fall of Babylon. So the first thing is trust in the Lord, that he is in control. I think a lot of times that as human being, we may trust God in certain areas and say, oh, he can do this. But then in the areas that we really care about, we feel that God is not in control in those areas. You know, so maybe we say that, oh, you know, so-and-so have illness. Oh, we pray and pray. We think that God will heal them, right? And then in other areas, like I lost my job. I'm looking for a job. Because I'm the one that's being affected, I may not think that God can offer me a job. Or vice versa. If I lose a job, I say, I just need to pray and I'll get a job. But then when a sickness come into me, a cancer come into me, and I don't believe that God can heal me. You know what I'm trying to say? It's like sometimes I'm very isolated in my way of trusting in God. It's like oh, certain area that's not as important, I know that God can take care. But in things that I really care about, I kind of lose faith in God, that I don't think he can help me. And that's why the Bible here says, trust the Lord with all your heart in all areas, and don't lean unto your own understanding, but in your ways acknowledge him. So the second point is acknowledge God, meaning you give credits to God. And if you remember when we read about Belshazzar, Daniel was telling him that God is the one that gave you breath. He's the one that holds you until now. Yet you give glory to the gods of gold and silver and iron and wood. And so it makes God really angry when we credit things to others while he's the one that is actually the one that provides. So I guess as a life application that we have to think about, do we take time to credit the things in our lives to God? Okay. And then the next part, it says, fear the Lord and depart from evil, and then it shall be health to your flesh. And the reason that Belshazzar did what he did was because he did not fear the Lord. And therefore, the things that he did was evil in God's eyes. So it is very important that if we actually acknowledge God, we would fear the Lord. And I remember that 2 weeks ago, one of the senior class teachers mentioned that while we were studying Isaiah, she said, if we really truly fear God, we wouldn't be doing the things that we do now. You know, we will really watch ourselves, whether people can see or people cannot see. We will really do things that are reverent towards God in every aspect of our lives, including how we come to observe during Sabbath, or how we prepare ourselves Friday night before Sabbath, or as we go to partake the fellowship meal, or when we go to RE classes, we will always watch ourselves and make sure we fear God and are reverent towards him. But a lot of ways, we become very loose in our mind, that we're very casual in the ways we treat God. So in this studying all this, you can see that God really has the sovereignty, and that we really need to fear him and not go against him and do things that he dislike. And the next one is honor the Lord with your possessions. Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, both of them do not recognize that the things that they have, all the glory of Babylon, was given by God himself. They all think that it was because of their own power. And because of that, they lost their kingdom. And therefore, here, the Bible tells us we need to honor God by recognizing that whatever we have belongs to him. You know, a lot of times I see my attitude when I give tithes. And then in the past, when I give tithes, I feel this sense of like self-sacrifice. Like I'm sacrificing a piece of me to give it to God. So it hurts when I give tithes, you know, like it's like, oh, that's a lot of money. You know, I could use this for something else. Or, you know, I have to think about, oh, do I count my tithe as before tax or after tax? Because I save about, you know, several hundreds or $1,000 before after tax, right? But actually, you know, in the past few years, I think God's slowly teaching me that to recognize his sovereignty, that we're just giving back to God what he has given to us. So sometimes we even have to have the concept that I'm just a steward in keeping God's money. And when there's a need, I need to share my wealth with other people who actually have the need. And then the last one is, it says, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. That's also a way to acknowledge God. And if you see Nebuchadnezzar, he actually honored God's chastening. And because of that, God restored him. And I guess reflecting on this is that sometimes God chastened me. And if it's on things that I have very strong opinion, then I became rebellious. And I became angry with God. I become very bitter towards God. It's like, God, how can you do this to me? You know. But on things that I don't really care about, it's like, okay, as God will, right? So that really shows that I do not acknowledge God's sovereignty. And from studying this, that we really need to acknowledge him by accepting his correction. When bad things happen to me, I need to reflect. So that is the fall of Babylon. And hopefully you have learn something new that will edify you, as it has edified me. And we would like to ask Angie.